Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Well, North Bay's Jackson Jack, sometime out. She's Jay-Z on the board. We'll have Mr. Kevin O'Neill in a minute. SC Futures down 7. NASDAQ Futures down 10. Interesting day yesterday. We were up strong all day. We made a couple of attempts to go negative, didn't quite make it, then finished up fairly strong. So, sort of interesting. And we have Jay-Z. We have to have Jay-Z start writing the headlines. Yesterday we were down as risk of recession fades. Yes, or up. Yesterday we're down on risk of recession, maybe not fading all the way. And we can't even figure out. I don't know how we're even going to figure out if we're in a recession these days with the some of the cheating we're doing, I think, or some of the less than truthful reporting we're doing. It's for those of you who maybe are not into the old definitions. I think a recession, again, this is from memory. I think a recession is a decrease in GDP 2 quarters in a row, but you won't know this till like quarters after. And there's a special group of dudes and ladies that actually let you know when you're in the recession. That's their job, man. We're not sure why that became their job, but I remember the recession we had when 2 years later, Jay-Z, they said, by the way, the second quarter, you really weren't down. It really wasn't the recession. So there. That made you feel better even if you were off work. Well, it wasn't a recession. Why was I off work? Just saying. Very bizarre stuff. What is this story about this guy in Chicago? You know more about this than me. You go with this local media stuff. The guy allegedly claimed there was a hate crime and two guys jumped him. It turns out he paid the two guys to jump him. And so they're trying to get, indict the guy on, for reporting a false crime, which takes police time and energy and money and so forth. And everybody's all over the guy for about 2 months. Yesterday, without a hint of a clue, the district attorney dismisses all charges and seals the case. What the bleep?
Yeah, I don't know. That's all I heard about it, too. They didn't really explain why the felonies were dropped, but, yeah, everyone's pissed about it.
Why would you have any idea that that would be sealed? What in their... I don't get this whole thing. I don't follow the local news all that much, other than know people are shooting everybody right and left. And we don't seem to be able to do anything. Kevin, how are you?
Good morning. How you doing today?
All right. Are you being let off and your stuff sealed like Jesse Smollett?
Yeah. Well, first I have to have the gang of roving. Oh, I don't know. Let me see who's gonna be roving to attack me.
Yeah.
I just know that I have this red baseball style cap. That says Bushwood Country Club on it.
Yeah.
From a distance it could be mistaken, and you never know what a roving gang of, liberal gay black people will come, and they might tar me just like they singled out poor Jesse.
What do you have to pay him, though?
Well, yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah.
And you know what? I drive a hard bargain for those kinds of services.
Bushwood, a parking lot. But what was that from, Jay-Z? After your time, before your time, I mean.
I don't know. Give me a hint.
Caddyshack.
I don't think I've seen that one yet.
Yeah, the Well, it was, if I would have said...
Is that on your list, Kevin?
I don't know if I put Caddyshack on the list or not. I'll have to check.
Oh, it has to be. It has to be.
Well, I'm pretty selective about my comedies. You know, Caddyshack is a fun movie. It's a whole lot of fun. But, I'm pulling it up right now. So we'll check it out here.
My niece seems to have a certain zest for living. Yes. I love it. What was the judge's line? I feel like there's some people in the current administration like this. I've sent kids to the gas chamber younger than you, felt I owed it to them. Or something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
You've got to give me such a great funky judge. Speaking of funky judges, we'll talk a little bit of market. We want to talk some NCAA. We'll talk about the Bulls. Everybody in the team suddenly now is hurt or sick. They don't play any starter, for God's sake. Very bizarre situation of what's going on in some of these professional sports. But I want to ask you, is it strike you? We always use the term spread when you're a trader for many things other than the bid and ask spread in an option market, which it started out to be, or stock market. Just strike you, Kevin, at the amount of basically crap that people get away with, and nobody seems to care. Law enforcement, I mean, it's just right out in front of everybody. Nobody cares. Anybody who's in any kind of industry can point fingers at just about, 100 people that are belonging to, local 12. And nobody in law enforcement gives a rat's behind, and you can't get them to focus on any of it. Any kind of internet crime, any kind of... I just heard one that one of my mechanic buddies was trying to be selling his place. And the guy who's supposed to be buying it from him was getting a loan from the bank. And it turns out somebody hacked into the bank, and the loan the wife was getting, they got the money in the loan. Not her. I'm going to guarantee you that it was under, what's the number? Well, if you lose less than a million, they tell you it's a million. If you lose over a million, they tell you if it's under 10 million, they won't look for it. I will bet you that maybe the bank's looking for it, but not one law enforcement person gives a rat's behind about that. Yet, if all of a sudden they get, it's politically, something that they want to go after, the resources they can bring on people, barge into your house, talking to you at the kitchen table, they can lie to you, you can't lie to them, and all of a sudden, 6 months later, they say your story doesn't match, and they can bring down, all of a sudden, if you use the phone, it's conspiracy to this, this is a conspiracy to that. The spread between them not giving a crap and them all of a sudden finding out that it's politically expedient for them to come after you, I've never seen anything like it, Kevin. Never seen anything like it.
Actually, that's you're describing the Manafort case.
Yeah.
Because, they looked at him years ago. And decided not to bother, and then now he's in jail for things he did years ago, because they wanted to, kind of squeeze the fruit stand a little bit for him and see if they could get him to, give up some information.
Well, I'm going to say that I probably mentioned this before. I knew at least one, maybe two, I'll use the term bozos like that. When I was on the trading floor, not my friends, but people that were investors in firms that I knew and people that I knew and somehow caught wind of it and blah, blah, blah. And, Kevin, the world is full of these losers that if anybody took any kind of look at what was going on, would be able to find. And yet they don't, because they don't care. And then all of a sudden, they focus on somebody. And like you say, they'll come away with an indictment. What'd they say? You can indict a toaster if you wanted to? I mean, I'm not saying...
Ham sandwich.
I'm, yes, thank you. Yeah, I'm not... Manafort, I'm sure, is a total sleazebag that does nothing but would work with these foreign governments when he's not supposed to. Did work for guys that were probably on our CIA's crap list and made money all over the place. And I knew a couple guys like that. And yet, if they don't focus on you... nobody cares. I would bet you that if they actually gave one of these investigations to every one of these big firms that sheltered all this money overseas for years and then got these people in a room and went to their house and their wife crying and a dog barking and grilling them on the kitchen table about was it really legal to do the double Dutch sandwich and who did you listen to do this, and who was the guy to do this? I mean, I would bet you that somewhere along the line, they come out with two counts of wire fraud because you called Europe or something, and yet, everybody just gets away with it until someone decides you shouldn't, or it's politically expedient. You know, Kevin, I think this really sucks, and you know, I don't care which side. I think Manafort's a sleazebag, but I'll bet there's 100 of them out there, 100 other people out there just like him.
Well, and there's a couple others in this case. You know, Carter Page was one who, you know, he still claims he didn't do anything wrong, say anything wrong, and really was tangential to the, you know, to the Trump campaign in the first place. But in his case, he said rather than spend every last dime he had and go into debt, 14 days in jail was his plea bargain, so he did it. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what he says. So we'll see how that goes. Whereas what was the guy's name? DeCourcy was a guy with deep pockets who could have fought everything. And so when he was asked to plead to something and say he lied, he just told them to pound sand and they backed off, and he never got indicted or anything. So it just, you know, it depends on, you know, how much capability you have to defend yourself, too.
Well, it's funny, Kevin. People use their, I talk to a lot of people, and so do you. But it's stunning to me. I can never find anybody to totally agree with me on the Rod Blagojevich situation. And I think it's very rare that I think in a situation that, God, if you don't agree with me, you're really screwed up. I tell you what, I honestly do believe in this one, even though I'm one out of 100. And I was never a fan of the man, you know, at all. But anybody, there's this whole concept that if I called five of my buddies today and went through this whole thing, they'd say that I was nuts, that if you don't do anything wrong, you got nothing to worry about, blah, blah, blah. And the idea of Blagojevich, A, being having that sentence, but if anybody follows through the situation, the man, if you took a look at the amount of hours the FBI spent chasing him, because what's his name needed a scalp. You know, I don't know if he wants to be governor or president someday, and the amount of resources of the FBI in the Northern District of Illinois that was going after one guy without doing any of the stuff. That I like to see him do, going after wire fraud and other things at banks. I'm not saying they're doing none of it, and if they tried the guy, they got a hung jury. He basically pissed away all his money on the first round. The second round, because of one juror who they basically put her name up in lights, and still had that trial back here in Illinois after the one juror that voted the wrong way was vilified. Then had another thing where didn't he have to use a public defender or something? Well, now you got the guy totally undressed and after him. That process you shouldn't do to a dog, much less a human being. That's not America. Yet if I say that to anybody, he was a sleazebag, it could never happen to you, don't worry about it. I never thought that way, Kevin. I always think that it could happen to me or you or somebody I care about. Or anybody, for that matter, even people I don't care about.
Or if you just get caught in the switches on another investigation.
Yeah.
You know, that's what you see more is, you know, we want you to provide evidence against person X, and if you don't, we'll get you for something.
Well, I think on the Board of Trade thing, before I got here, it was a big investigation on the Board of Trade. My guys didn't even know anything about trading, because if you would have asked me, I could have pointed out a few things that were wrong on trading floors, mostly having to do with member firms, but that's another aside. But I think it ended up that the only person that went to jail, I'm not positive on this one, Kevin, it was a long time ago, was a lady clerk, a phone clerk, because she wouldn't, they thought she had information she wouldn't come up with. I mean, they never got to any of the big guys. The big guys were never involved. The guys didn't, they went in and do, you know, they zero in on rules that, of course, it was, all of a sudden, a felony to trade after the close, right? Oh, you're not supposed to trade after close. Everybody knows that. But what would cause Kevin O'Neill to trade after the close?
Well, I don't know. Bad watch?
Well, no, the bell goes off. What if I'm the broker standing next to you and say, holy bleep, Batman, I got this order at, close at 3:15, I got this order at 3:10. The market's in the same place, can you sell me a 5-lot? I owe this guy a fill. Now, is that, I probably did that, I'm gonna say once in a while, for somebody. And, I never made money on one of them. I mean, the idea is all of a sudden there's this massive trade that goes down because I know something that somebody else didn't. It had nothing to do with that. It had to do with you're the broker, the guy who is actually executing public orders, sits there and goes, oh, God, this guy deserves a fill. What am I going to do with this? And if it's a 5 or 10 lot, there's always going to be a trader going, I'll just do it. I'll take it for him. And, is that a felony? I don't know. Doesn't sound like much to me.
Or is that a we'll slap you down, maybe even do a fine.
Or maybe...
And the fine doesn't have to be debilitating. It has to be enough to
remind
you to be a good swift kick in the butt.
Well, or, you know, I'm not even sure it's... Because if that doesn't happen, if you owe somebody a fill, what ends up happening then is the broker has to fill the person out of his error account the next morning. So essentially what would happen is if the order isn't filled, the proper way to do it is to call the person up and say, you're basically stopped at that number. So the next morning, you do the 5-lot. If you get it cheaper, you give it to the customer cheaper. If you do it for more, you pay him cash the difference. Now, wouldn't it be easier for somebody to just do a 5-lot with him at the price where it is? Just saying.
Yeah, well, I'll take your word for it.
But, I mean, there was a process. But then brokers would say, I'll just do it out of my error account. No, you can't do that either because you're not supposed to trade. Trade has to happen the next morning if you do it properly. But it all came down to customer service, really, more than anything else. I mean, nobody ever traded an order that came in after 3:15, ever. And that's really what people were, if you didn't know what you were talking about, that's essentially, if I were to say the order took place after the close, the Kevin O'Neills of the world would say, why did somebody get a chance to trade after the close? Well, you didn't. Nobody sent an order in at 3:15:01 and got traded with. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It was something that's, oh my God, the clerk's got this in his hand and it got lost and this thing's been here since 2:00 type of thing. We owe this guy a fill. And it was, anyway. Right, let's talk B-ball. Why am I so disgusted after watching two close games? In one, I saw the guy travel all the way from the free throw line and win that game and without a whistle. Then in the Duke game, I saw Mr. Wonderful run over a guy all the way to the hoop. And then, they win. And no call on that one. Why am I?
Well, I thoroughly agree with you, especially the Duke game because, he did get the call, and you're talking Mr. Wonderful is Zion Williamson, and I have no problem with Zion Williamson.
I don't either.
You know, he plays hard, he plays smart, he's a good boy, he's an incredible talent. In fact, what he does that is really hard to fathom is what the time lapse between catching the ball and getting the shot up is incredibly fast.
Yeah.
You know, he converts it. I don't know how you guard that. But yeah, absolutely. He ran over the guy on the drive that led to the winning points. He just blasted a guy in the lane and the guy went sprawling out with no call. Then he drove to the basket and Taco fouled him and you know that was fine. That was a legitimate call. But then he made one free throw to tie. No, he missed the free throw, didn't he?
No, I mean, he made the first one.
Made the first one.
No, he only had one free throw because he made the shot. He made the shot.
He made the shot and missed
yeah.
Missed
and then the two guys.
Whatever it is, they went up by a point. But on the missed free throw, when Barrett got the basket, and that was how they got the lead, by the way. That was how they got the lead. So he must have missed the shot. And Barrett just two hands shoved the UCF guy out of the way to get the rebound, and that didn't get called. And you know, I was sitting there watching, going, "You can't do that." On the other end, the fellow drove to the basket. He got bumped off of his shot and got no call. So, I hate that kind of officiating, you know, where people say, well, unless it's really, really obvious, I don't want to blow the whistle because I don't want to decide the game. You're deciding the game just as much by not blowing
right.
the whistle as you do when you call the fouls as you see them.
For those of you who maybe don't watch this as closely as Shirley Kevin does, when did...
I'm just Kevin, not Shirley Kevin.
Shirley, yeah, don't call me Shirley. When did the college, the NCAA, if you look at a basketball court, and you've played as long as I have, you look at the spots down by the free throw line where people line up when the person's shooting a free throw. If you watch close, you'll see somewhere in the last several years, in order to stop essentially the contact down there, the colleges have moved everybody up one from the bottom spot. In the pros, they still use the last spot, right? Colleges, you don't. You use the second spot, correct?
You know what? I know they made the move. I haven't paid attention to the line to see what they're doing. So
no, but
I
mean, you're in the second spot. So the chances, I mean, not that it can't happen, if it's the front of the rim or the guy clanks it off the backboard and the ball bounces out pretty far, the chances of the offensive team getting that rebound are 1 in 100 because you basically got to go through somebody to get there. When the pros go up, the one guy's far enough under where if the ball pops up, the second guy is right there for it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, so when these two guys that are from USF damn near ended up out of bounds, they got pushed so hard. And all of a sudden the two Duke guys are standing right there. That can't happen. That cannot happen legally.
It is a physical impossibility.
Right. I can't change the laws of physics, Captain. You know, it's a physical impossibility for on a regular ball to come straight down for those two guys to be there and the other two guys to be in the second row, essentially.
Yeah, and this gives me a flash to my cousin Vinny where he's saying, yes, do the laws of physics change where in your kitchen?
Yeah.
Or were they magic grits?
Yeah. the magic grits. Jay-Z, did you have any grits when you were out in Tempe?
I did not, but I grew up on grits with my friend Jasmine. She used to make them for me all the time.
Were they instant grits?
I think so.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
Because ain't no self-respecting Southerner would make instant grits.
That's right.
These are all movie lines, Jessica.
So did you see the one where the people were pissed off about the travel? So I was watching it on Yahoo Sports. The guy left the free throw line and he never dribbled. What game was that? It was one of the few other close ones. It was the last minute.
Again, defying laws of nature.
Yeah. You know what I find, Kevin, and I was never a huge fan in our era that any time somebody got the ball underneath, they called a travel on them, especially Sid Catlett. But you watch these guys in these three-point positions now. When they get the ball, they shuffle both feet to get their feet where they want them before they shoot without a dribble.
Oh yeah, that's the Toby Knight shuffle.
Yeah,
yes, if you do it every time, they won't call it. You have to be consistent.
Because I mean, it's actually something that's taught to you, and some of your best players have it. I mean, the Michael Jordans of the world, those kinds of guys. The idea is when you catch the pass from somebody, especially off a pick, your feet are where they're supposed to be to shoot. Because if you get the ball, you can't move your feet to get them shoulder width apart or whatever. So if you catch the ball and they're too narrow, nobody wants to shoot like that. Or if they're too wide, nobody wants to shoot like that, right? There's
yeah,
a spot.
Well, I have a couple of, I agree.
So you do
that little travel shuffle to get yourself the shot.
But the thing is, Kevin, there's
the switch pivot in the post.
Yeah.
I see that missed a lot. Where the guy will spin one way, it's not there. He'll spin back the other way and change his pivot foot. That's traveling. And the jump stop is allowed, which I get. But it seems to me that if you do the jump stop, once you launch again, you have traveled.
Yes. Well, I mean, I understand why they want to get the refs kind of out of the game, but it was such a skill set to catch the pass ready to shoot. To now say that you don't have to do that, I think it diminishes the game a little bit.
To make the pass in the right spot for the guy to catch and shoot.
Right. But now they're right in front of everybody. I'll just shuffle both feet. I don't like them here. Or, you know, and when somebody coming at you, and they'll never dribble. they just move it. It's a, I don't know, I just, I mean, how much?
You're talking Eurostep now.
Well, but how much pressure is on these refs to get the right team? I mean, it always strikes me, Kevin, that every year they want the one upset. But then after there's one upset, then the chalk gets every call. They don't want Duke out. I mean, they don't want.
Yeah, I understand that, Tom. I don't know that referee. I have no reason to believe referees consciously do that, but I do think that they fall in love with some players, and in those cases, they tend to, you know, they turn into Dick Vitale as they watch him. They think everything he does is great. I think that happens a lot, and I also think there is this mentality that says I really don't want to blow the whistle unless I have no choice at the end of a ball game, and I just hate that philosophy.
Well, I think other than the Saints game, blowing the whistle wrong is way worse than not blowing it wrong. In terms of who's at fault.
Yeah, I agree.
SP Futures down 5.25. As the futures down 650. Again, we were up yesterday, even though we were kind of wobbling a couple times during the day. Finished up. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with their choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. She's Jay-Z. He's Mr. Kevin O'Neill. S&P Futures down 5.25. NASDAQ Futures down 550. Dow Futures down 66. Big mover in the Dow this morning is, Apple's up $1.27. We've got Boeing, is down, $1.95 because of, didn't crash a plane, but one had landed with engine problems in Florida. I think it was Florida. Anyway, what part of what part of grounding don't you get? Just saying.
Well, you're talking about airplanes.
We'll talk about it after we're done here. But what part of grounding means ground? Doesn't mean you can fly it. Isn't that the way? I'm just one of those guys that grounded means you can't leave the house, right?
Yes, and no phone.
Yeah, well. Didn't have to worry about that in our day. Dax down 32.3%, FTSE down 23.3%, CAC around down 15.3%, a full sweep at 0.3% over in Europe. Over in Asia, you have the Nikkei down 49.2%, Shanghai is now up, back over 3,022, Hang Seng up 161.5% at 28,728. We've got oil down 36 cents, Brent down 7. RBOB gas, $1.93. Our gas went up 5 cents in the last 2 days here in Illinois, Kevin, up to 283. That's not good, especially if you own a Suburban. Gold up 280, 1317. Silver up 2 cents at 1545. So the metals stay high. And by the way, I have access to a feed. I won't say Dr. J's feed. It wasn't like I stole it either. It was given to me. Options that are trading the unusual activity. Kevin, people are buying boatloads of these, of this GDX, which is the gold miners index. Somebody bought a bull call spread 100,000 times last Friday, 50,000 times yesterday. So somebody's serious about gold continuing to go up here. I think a lot of people think it's going to make a run towards 1400. Of course, then again, I've thought that for a while, and it hasn't happened. But we're starting to move a little bit. Jay-Z, what do you got for us? Trevi Weather Sports.
Thanks, Chief. Morning, everyone. The time's now 6:37. Chicago's high today is 55 with a low of 34. Phoenix is mostly cloudy today with a high of 85, low of 58. In basketball, the Bulls lost to the Raptors 112-103. Suns were off. In spring training, the Cubs beat the Red Sox 16-7. White Sox beat the Diamondbacks 7-1. And in hockey, the Coyotes beat the Blackhawks 1-0. In traffic, Kedzie is closed between Douglas Boulevard and Polk Street due to an accident, and nothing else to report. Back to you.
Was the Ryan back open?
Looks like it.
Oh, because it was closed earlier for a crash of some kind. But at least it wasn't a shooting. We haven't had a shooting in, like, a day or two. It's going to be like a new record. Hey, Kevin,
Rock and rolling. Hey, just real quickly, the comedies on the list. Airplane. American Graffiti. Animal House. Being There, Bull Durham, Ferris Bueller's Day Off,
saw that one.
MASH, Some Like It Hot, the original producers, The Sting, and I don't know what you call Fargo.
I'm not so sure this thing was a comedy. It was a great movie.
Yeah, it was kind of a caper movie, but yeah. it was. I think it's also a comedy.
You had guys getting killed in it. You don't normally have people getting killed in comedies.
Okay, well, then we'll call it a caper movie.
All right. Well, classic writing, though. And plus all Chicago, too. Wow.
Yeah, it's a really good movie.
And it's
very entertaining all along the way.
The
good ending, cool story, and what really does a lot for a movie is not just good writing, not just good anything, but also it just has some great little passages or scenes or whatever along the way. You need to find some things, because everything drags, every story drags a little bit in the middle.
Well, I think that it has to do with, a lot of times it's the strength of the secondary characters.
Yeah.
Who was the guy who did he's the guy with the mustache. It wasn't Sam Elliott. Who's the dude who actually ran, like, did all the work for this thing? The guy.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. What is his name?
He's the one who came in and said that horse is going to run second. The guy. What was his name? He set up the whole casino in like a night, and it had all torn down in like 2 hours. And he was the brains behind the whole operation. Really, he was like Paul Newman's right hand man. It wasn't Sam Elliott? Who the hell was?
Looking it up on IMDb right now.
I got one quick question for you and the listeners. The scene where he went out the back door when he...
Robert Shaw. No, he was the bad guy.
He was the bad guy. Well, he was a terrific actor, too. The scene where he goes into the greasy spoon on the corner underneath the L-tracks.
Yeah.
And he ended up going out the bathroom window because the Joliet cop was chasing him. That exact same set was used in another big-time movie. Can you name it?
I cannot off the top of my head.
Remember when Roy Hobbs went and met, what's her name, in the thing after the movie?
Same actor, huh?
Same. No, yeah, same actor. But that was, who was that? That was, what's her name? Glenn Close. When she ordered the lemonade? When he met her. It was the exact same scene. That set was on the Universal back lot with the fake L-tracks and the whole bit. Anyway, Kevin, did you have a chance? I'm going to make a little reach here, but I see some of the wacky stuff going on in this world that may affect us someday. Did you happen to watch 60 Minutes? I mean, I know I asked you this in an email.
Oh, yeah, I went back and watched the segment you mentioned about the spying technology.
Have you ever spotted two more pompous asses on TV than those two people? I'm sure there have been.
Top 10 for sure.
For those, evidently, it's an Israeli firm, correct? That has some technology called a Pegasus technology, and they ended up. It essentially, they can tap into your cell phone and know who you're calling and where, and actually like listen in, right? They'll send you an email, and if you open the email, all of a sudden it's in there. You don't even know it's there.
Yeah, you basically have the worm in your phone, and it's going to start broadcasting.
So they've sold it. They believe in their mind that their review committee essentially is superior to governments all over the world. That they will sit down and they will determine whether a customer who pays for the friggin' nose for this, they never mention a price, whether a customer is okay to have it. They've essentially sold it to the Saudis. And Leslie Stahl was saying that this thing was used essentially to corral this Khashoggi guy, where he got dismembered. And she says, well, how can you possibly say this is not like a rogue state? What are you doing? Oh, no, we have our committee, and you should see how much our committee deliberates. She goes, how can you separate the fact that you want the money from a state, whether the state is good or not, and how do you make that determination? They were absolutely convinced that they were God on this. You couldn't get me to say something like that. Oh, no, this is really dangerous crap, and I don't have any problem selling it to these guys, that guys, because I vetted them, and I'm always right.
They also were saying that, you know, they sell it to them, and that's how they've captured a lot of, a lot of terrorists, a lot of Al-Qaeda types, and so on. And so, they're sort of justifying the, friendly fire is not the word, you know, whatever else happens, because they're using that greater good theory. Look, there may be times when that line of thinking applies. However, when people's lives get caught up in it, then maybe you have to ask yourself if you're really serving a greater good.
Well, I'm not at all convinced that to this day I can't stand the man because of the smirk on his face when he used to, Donald Rumsfeld, when we'd say, well, you know, you sent this rocket in there and you kind of missed the guy you're shooting for, and it like hit a hospital, and he would, well, you know, it's collateral damage. You basically shouldn't have been in a hospital in a place like that or something. I'm like, Donald, really? I mean, I don't know, this whole idea that, we're pretty convinced here who the bad guys are. Obviously the Osama bin Ladens of the world and so forth. But, you know, people used to say one man's a terrorist, another man's freedom fighter. I mean, it's, you know, I'm not going to absolve any of these people from what they do. But Jay-Z, are we all right here? There we go.
What's going on in the background?
We're not sure.
Sorry, that was all me. I clicked the wrong button.
Oh, God. What are you pushing buttons for over there anyway?
I didn't mean to. I tried to talk to you in our little speaker thing, and I clicked the wrong button.
Okay. Well, that's all right. I'm saying, you know, it's obviously here when people have been getting killed and so forth, you don't want to say things like this too often. But in some world, Kevin, one man's terrorist, another man's freedom fighter. I mean, I'm sure the British thought, Our people, George Washington was a terrorist, right? And we think he's the greatest man that ever lived. So it's,
Yeah, I don't even like trying to draw the equivalencies.
No.
I think you just look at the people, what the cause is, and what, you know, what they're willing to do to advance it, and you can evaluate whether it's worthwhile.
Well, yeah,
because is there such a thing as a just war? Yes, there is. And is there real collateral damage?
Why don't you hold that
war? Yes,
hold that thought, Kevin. Down five.
NASDAQ
down 4.25. We'll be right back. Kevin will see if he can remember his thought. We'll be right back. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs. Interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous. No return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort. Some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, if they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters.
the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures trading recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control. Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holly. Mr. Kevin O'Neill. She's Jay-Z on the board. SP Futures now only down 375. NASDAQ Futures only down 175. I'm going to think we're going to be up by the end of the show. Kind of heading in that direction. Hey, Kevin, I got a, even though I asked you to hold your thought, I have a interesting question. Maybe you know that you know the answer too. Suppose, for instance, I knew something about software and knew something about phones, which we all know would be. suppose all of a sudden I.
0 for 2, eh? 0 for 2.
But suppose all of a sudden somebody came down from the outer space and sprinkled in my brain all this knowledge. And I actually developed a program like that. Where I could essentially send you an email, or Jay-Z, oh God, I wouldn't want to go there. Jay-Z, and all of a sudden, I got to read and hear everything you said in your phone. Is that legal?
Say that again?
Is it legal if I could do that?
I would say no.
All right, so if the Saudi government decides that they listen to one of our shows and don't like us, and good luck with my phone, since I'm the one person the police could have my phone and say this can't be right. All I do is I use it just like it's a flip phone. I use it for a text, and I don't have any. I have one app on there, Chicago Parking, which I hate. Why would it be legal for the Saudi government to do that in somebody else's country?
Well, let me ask you a different question. First of all, it may be somebody else's country, so you know, depending on where you do this, you may not be violating local law. But aside from that, if there were something on the cell tower as you were driving past the cell tower, it drew your phone to connect there instead of to the usual carrier cell tower, and it passed it away, and if it were to say let's pass through the all of your calls, conversations, and all that, but while we're at it, we'll just suck off all the contents of your phone, including all your emails, texts, voicemails, and so on. And of course, we can intercept your phone calls. Do you think that's a good idea? Because there's probably about two-thirds of the states have that technology now.
I don't think it's
and
a very
good
idea.
The federal government has that technology now. It's called a cell site simulator. One of the brand names is Stingray, and it was developed for the first Gulf War, but now it has been deployed by law enforcement in many places. So you don't have a warrant for everybody who happens to pass by that cell tower.
I don't. When are people, especially young people, going to get tired of this?
When are politicians going to talk about privacy issues seriously?
I'm going to give you a statement from Bill Simon. Was he? What was he? I got a book from him.
Wasn't he transportation secretary at one point?
Time for Truth or whatever. And his line, and I'm sure he wasn't first with it, is freedom is not something the government gives to people. Freedom is something people take from government. It's not, you don't elect a politician.
It's not supposed to be that way, of course, but yeah.
But you don't elect a politician to spend his time making you free. I mean, what I'm saying, I said that wrong. I mean, you have to demand it. I mean, and we're going right down this road. If you were to ask 15 young people, Would you rather have everybody know that you bought stuff at Dunkin' Donuts, or are you so friggin' lazy you can't pull the $5 bill out of your pocket? Everybody will say, I don't care what I have at Dunkin' Donuts, or whatever. I don't do anything wrong. Same thing I started the show with. I don't do anything wrong. I don't care what anybody knows. So if I'm a politician, why should I care if you don't?
I agree that there is one high profile politician who raises this issue all the time, and that's Rand Paul.
One out of 535.
Well, and there are a few others in Congress who are on it, but by and large, no, it's not an issue. Does it come up in campaigns very often? Hardly ever. And you're right, it's because people aren't demanding it, so politicians aren't being responsive to it, but there are a few out there who, look, there's a lot of politicians who run on issues that, that the average person that don't bother the average person, at least until it's raised. That's part of leadership is to get out there and say, here's some things I see and here's some things I want to
do. But how do you fight the battle with, I'm going to say in the last 18 months, say the last year and a half, could have been longer, there's enough crap that's come out on Facebook where you couldn't get me on Facebook, even though I know Stocks and Jacks is on there and Maddie throws stuff out on it. You couldn't get me to look at it other than to send stuff out to people and let them know if we have a guest or so forth. We don't put any, there's nothing personal, there's nothing, anything like that. It's got to be the most bland page on history. And yet, I would just as soon dump it, if you ask me. But I've never had a personal one. One is probably, as I can't really, become I'm a registered guy, and of course FINRA is all over anybody, communicating to anybody. So I never even had one. Now, but in the last year or year and a half, if I had one, I would be sitting there going, what am I doing here? And yet last year they have 9% more people and 30% more revenue. So why would I ever make it a case in Congress? As my buddy Bill Murphy said, you couldn't get American people to stamp the thing they do on dogs between their shoulder blades so you know right where somebody is at every second, yet we've done it to ourselves with these phones. You can't turn a damn phone off. You can't put the location detector, because you might have to ask the thing how to get to a restaurant two blocks away like you should know already. I mean, we're doing it to ourselves, Kevin. The only thing that George Orwell was wrong about is that it wasn't government forcing you to be accountable to them everywhere you went in front of the TV. You did it to yourself.
Yeah. It's crazy, isn't it?
It's like the movie... Hunt for Red October, and one Russian guy says to the other one, you arrogant ass, you've killed us.
Well, and I think that's, there's a lot of truth to that. I mean, what do we do? And I'll tweet out a couple of video links about the Utah data center that we have that's just a data gathering place. Privacy is a big deal, and it's one that's not... It's not being addressed. It's not even being considered important.
So should I add you to the list of last Friday when Carl Denninger sent me this email, and Carl's the best, and he says, we both believe in antitrust. We both believe in freedom. He goes, you know what? When we're gone, there might not be anybody left. He goes, nobody cares about this stuff. I never saw an entire generation sell out privacy for convenience. I never thought it was that big of a deal to pull 5 hours out of my pocket. Yet it turns out that's, God, I got to go to the bank. I got to get the $5. Man, I can just use my phone and boy, oh boy. I mean, I never even dreamed that was an invasion of my arm strength, but evidently it is.
Well, and the thing is, does the convenience really can the convenience be designed to accommodate privacy?
I'm going to say no. I'm going to say absolutely no.
I'm going to say it would be very, very difficult, and it would be expensive, and I think that's the bigger problem.
Let's go with something real simple.
They want to get product to market, and some of those issues be damned.
Let's go with something real simple. We only got a couple minutes. When they went with the stupid easy pass and the toll roads, I believe the somewhere was that since you pay for it in advance, there's no reason to keep the records, right? Really. So I think that somebody mentioned, or somewhere in a bill, was after 60 days or something, they're supposed to be destroyed. 90 days, who the hell knows? I think that was in there, I'm not positive. And now, of course, they're never destroyed. And they also have money to put towers on other streets around the toll roads. So if you go by, they know when you're on another street, not even on the toll road, under the excuse that if the toll road ever is blocked by traffic and you're forced off, they want to know what street you go on. So they got money in the budget to put a tower up there and track you on like Milwaukee Avenue in Elston? Or, I mean, what the hell, Kevin? I mean, do you think if the governor, the new governor who never would say, it says destroyed at 60 days, I want them destroyed. Do you think anybody pay attention to them? Or some guy would say, oh no, I'll take it home on a thumb drive just in case they ever need it. Do you think people would even listen to them? No. I don't think they would either. That's pretty darn scary. Kevin, thank you very much. I'll see you on Saturday. I'll talk to you Friday,
but I'll talk to you before then too, and we'll figure out where we can find a beverage beforehand.
Absolutely. Maybe, who knows, if Audrey can't come, Russell might have to be my date. S&P futures down 370.
Okay. Russell, it's as long as he wears the sweater, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, me too. NASDAQ futures down 250. We'll be right back, Mr. Russell Rhodes.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with their choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's JOHN@PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, Nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. Mr. Russell Roach. He's Jay-Z on the board. SP Futures down 350. NASDAQ Futures down 2. We're coming back here. We actually flashed positive here and then the NASDAQ during break and then kind of back down a little bit. All right, Russell, I'm going to ask you one more time. What part of grounded, I mean, don't we get here with this plane?
You asked me the same thing twice and I answered it twice off the air. That basically, they weren't taking
off people. The air doesn't count.
They weren't taking people anywhere. They were just moving the plane, probably to save a little bit of money.
Grounded to me means don't fly the damn thing. By the way, now if this thing would have crashed,
Oh man, I assumed that they weren't giving anything over to the computers at all.
Okay, but
You know, there was training on what to do if the MAX starts misbehaving, and the MAX started misbehaving, and they brought it back down.
All right, so Russell is a decision maker at Jay-Z Insurance Company, and Southwest calls and says, you know those planes that are grounded? Yeah. We're paying $500 a night to keep them in the Orlando airport, where the hell they were.
Mm-hmm.
We want to fly it out to the desert. Will you cover it? What do you say on a grounded plane?
Do you call your insurance agent and say, I know I got auto insurance with you and I told you that I only drive 4 miles a day, but I'm getting ready to have a cross-country trip?
I'm going
to
say that if...
You wouldn't have done that anyway.
I'm going to say that if a car has a problem to where, like, it's accelerating rapidly or the brakes don't work.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, the whoever does that, whatever agency, says you can't drive it for a fix. The last thing I'm going to do is go out and get in an accident because I don't see how my insurance covers me at all.
They're going to say, yeah, they're going to be on you about that.
Yeah.
Well, they were moving it to storage. I thought they, honestly, when I first read it, I assumed they were taking it out for maintenance, but maybe they're putting all of their planes in a single place so they can, if there is a fix, there will be a fix.
Well,
and then I also know that if you're going to just leave these things on the ground, you want them in a nice, dry place.
Right.
And that ain't Orlando.
No, I mean,
I think there's more to it than the $500 a day or whatever, and I know we're making that number up.
I know these cities eviscerate these airlines for planes overnight. That's why nobody wants to leave a plane at night at O'Hare.
No. And I'm usually one of the last flights into O'Hare when I come back from New York. And I see that. I see all these empty gates.
Yep.
And then they still put me at the end of the freaking...
Oh, yeah. have you ever seen a special on, the storage / graveyard facilities?
Oh, yeah. I've seen one.
I've been
out in Arizona and seen it.
It's pretty special.
It's kind of cool looking.
Yeah, there's different levels of storage. Mm-hmm. And the ones that you plan on putting back in service, because it's so hot out there, they have to go and open the doors every day.
Yeah, so they don't, you know, it's kind of like if, when I grew up in Tennessee, and if you left a sealed soft drink in your car, sometimes you'd come out and the little cap would have popped off of it. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
The planes would be expanding and contracting if you don't let them air out.
Right.
You leave the door open.
Yep.
Well, little critter maybe crawls up in there, makes itself at home. 2 years later, somebody reaches in the little pocket and finds a little gecko skeleton.
I could have used it the other night because I had my buddies from the Fed, and of course I was giving them my usual crap.
Mm-hmm.
They'll talk about the one guy gave me his workload. It's something only you would appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
It has to do with you know, some sort of nondescript settlement agreement with some country and something to make sure. It is amazing how much work those guys do when people criticize the Fed, which everybody does, how much actual work gets done to make sure that every check everybody writes and every wire transfer and stuff goes where it's supposed to go. It's an amazing system.
Yeah, and it's a lot more important than a lot of people realize, and we also take it a lot more for granted than we should.
Yeah, well, especially if you do any kind of foreign currency transactions.
Yeah.
They're settling back and forth. And I didn't hit you up last week with the notional value of these credit default swaps. Mm-hmm. Are you astounded they're still this high after the...
I actually am. I'm astounded at how big that market, you know, grew right back up to. And, you know, I hope they're... I do know that there's a lot more oversight than there was, you know, 11, 12 years ago. There used to be these things were completely traded over the counter. Nobody was really keeping up with who had what positions. Now a good portion of them go through exchange-like entities that are called swap execution facilities.
I'm going to say less than 1%.
Oh, no. You're way off on that one.
Okay.
It's like two-thirds of them.
Well, I want to be off. I want
no, you're way off on that
one. I want them to be going through.
No, this is something that you just suddenly wandered into my day job.
All right. Well, it's fine. That's why you're here.
Yeah. They created something called a swap execution facility. There are like a couple dozen of them that anything that is considered kind of a standard swap, and that includes the credit default swaps, have to be traded and cleared through these facilities. But and that's like, let's just say about half or so have to be.
All right,
but then of the other half that don't have to be, a good majority of those are being cleared through swap execution facilities anyway, voluntarily. So that system is not nearly as it's a lot more transparent than it was, you know, a little over a decade ago.
Okay, but now, yep. you opened up a door here. We got to walk through it. My my friend of mine who was who shall go nameless, but was the head of Board of Trade Clearing for a while, and then CME Clearing or whatever it was, and then he went to ICE. And ICE was after the fiasco in 2008. My impression, I haven't seen him in a while, my impression was there was all kinds of interest out of the gate. And as the years went by, less and less everybody was going to be forced to do this and blah, blah, blah. And ICE was spending all this money. And they wanted to be a leader in this area. And they actually, I think they were going to go so far as to use it as a regular exchange transaction where the clearing firm or the exchange essentially guaranteed the trade to the other side.
Yeah.
And as time went by, I mean, he's now retired. I think that whole impetus for that dried up and guys went right back to doing it the way they always did it.
No, what ended up happening is the exchanges didn't win that business.
Okay.
You know, I was at CBO I joined CBO, you know, about 2 weeks after the market bottom in 2009. And I actually started paying attention to all these over-the-counter derivatives because I was under the impression that they were going to move to exchanges. Instead, what has happened is there have been a bunch of entities that are, everybody calls them SEFs.
But there's no guarantee there.
What do you mean there's no guarantee?
I mean, those people don't guarantee the trade.
No, they don't guarantee the trade.
Well, the exchanges were going to.
But, well, there's still clearinghouses as well that, you know, that pay attention to all of this.
All right, well, let me back up a bit here because I'm just trying
The exchanges don't guarantee the trade either.
I love where you're going on this but I have to explain, Lucy, to our listeners a little bit. When you do it a simple transaction, a guy like TPH, which is my acronym with, he would be Cardigan guy, CG, Russell.
Oh my God.
So if we do a transaction, if I buy 10 calls from you, and it clears, you know, there's not an out trade or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't have a trade with you. I have a trade with OCC. Correct?
Right.
So if I do a trade tomorrow with DRJ and sell them, I'm flat.
Yeah.
Okay, so I have no position. But if I do a trade in a credit default swap in the old days, if I buy one with you and make $1,000 and sell it to Dr. J, I'm not flat. I'm long one with you, or I'm short one with Dr. J. Mm-hmm. And therein lies the problem, the counterparty risk, where an exchange essentially takes people out of that. The exchange yeah. guarantees the transaction, and your position is with OCC, it's with New York Stock Exchange. I'll make it simpler, it's actually with DTC. But I mean, it's not with the other person anymore.
Right.
And I'm saying that these guys now who have this, what you're telling me, I still have the trade with you, it's just registered somewhere.
It's registered, it's monitored by both the SEC
whatever
and
the
CFTC.
Hell that means. Whatever that means.
Well, but they're paying attention to, they know what the risk is. And they should know, and it allows monitoring of what these you know, different people that are trading these things.
I don't want to get you in trouble, so I'll say it.
Uh-huh.
Monitoring by some bureaucrat gives me no cause to be happy.
Well, it's a much better system than it was before.
It's probably better than it was before.
The traditional exchanges, I don't know what they did. They just completely dropped the ball and were not able to win this business. There's an entity called TradeWeb, which is a really big
Russell.
One. What?
The banks won. What percentage of the currency trade was the CME ever able to get? One?
Very, very little.
I mean,
you mean on the futures part versus yeah. what's really going on? Very little.
The banks want that business. My stepfather was in the watch business.
Uh-huh.
Just talk about simple transactions, because I accused him of being one of those dirty speculators one day.
Oh.
Because this is a long time ago. God, I was in grad school, I think. So late 70s, and the currency was, people were beating up on the dollar. Actually it might have been in the early 70s, and it was when De Gaulle was still alive. Wasn't he sending over dollars and wanted to take gold back?
He wanted his gold.
Yeah.
Send me my gold.
Yeah, because, I mean, the dollar obviously was pegged to $35. We had enough gold for, like, what, a third of all the dollars or something, or not even that?
You bailed me out of World War II, and now I want all of my gold.
Right.
Well, I want my cake and eat it, too.
But we were devaluating the currency.
That's a
terrible
French accent.
I know, but we were devaluating the currency. It wasn't like we were that wrong in a deal. They would buy the movements from Switzerland.
Uh-huh.
And they knew the schedule. They would buy the movements. So, say, and they would assemble them here. So, okay, so it's March, and they know they're going to get a shipment in June. And so he would say, I went to the bank, and it looks like the dollar's going down, so we bought Swiss francs forward in June. We bought June francs.
That's
which is what?
A textbook example,
of what you should do.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you're not in the currency speculation business, you're in the watch business. But if enough people do that, mm-hmm. essentially, what are you doing? That group is now called speculators. And they're getting out of the dollar into the Swiss franc, even though you're doing it just for business. But now, there's no way on earth the bank who held the loan for Waltham Watch, that they're going to let you go somewhere else and do that transaction. They want to stiff you on that transaction.
Yeah.
You trade under their price and you pay them a commission. Or probably as a commission, they just take a markup. So they're not going to let you go to the CME and say, oh, you got to trade over there, that's okay. Well, they want the VIG. Right.
Yeah.
So that's why you're never going to get. They want it all in house. They want to know that the person they lent the money to has himself covered to June with them, not with some market maker on a Florida CME.
Yeah.
So this stuff never really. But the idea. I mean, you don't think the Fed was supposed to be watching the money coming from Japan in 2008? I mean, when you say watch, what does that even mean? I mean, they don't have a power to intercept the trade.
Right.
They don't have the power to say. No, you guys got to stop borrowing money in Japan at 1% and buying mortgages here at 6. Right? So what are you doing? You're taking our money, buying lunch, having your fanny in a desk that we bought, and what are you doing? Nothing. I'm saying
nothing.
I'm being somewhat harsh, but
I know.
But it's not much of a something. Let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. In my opinion.
I'm just telling you that it is.
It's better than it was.
It's much better than it was, and. Where I was going to give a shout out to, there's a firm called TradeWeb, which is one of the bigger SEFs, and they are actually getting ready to go public. So I think a lot more people are going to, and the valuation on the thing is going to be, I think, higher than SIBO was before SIBO purchased BATS.
Really?
Yeah.
All right.
It's interesting because this is just, it's a huge market. Like you just said when we started talking about this, that the credit default swaps are much bigger than anybody really thought, and a lot of people would be surprised to see how they have come back. But they've come back in a much better way, and there are a lot more eyeballs that have the data to know exactly what's going on from day to day.
The number we're talking about here is $633 trillion.
Yeah, it's a big number.
Now, my question is, and it's not just to get some kind of a... On a scale of 1 to 10 size market maker, I was probably a 4.5. I was never a 9 or 10 or those kind of guys. But because I have my own account. I have a firm behind me, so maybe a 4. I traded a real lot, Russell, but I never...
Yeah.
I wasn't good for the 1,000 lot or anything like that. I mean, no way on earth. Even 100 lot at lunchtime when nobody was around was a big deal. At $8 or something in the OEX. That was a tough one for me. But my point was, if I get to the end of the day, if I added up all my winning trades versus losing trades, but if I did 300 trades, the number is immense. Yet if you look at the end of the day, I made $5,000, I lost $5,000.
Yep.
Right? So this number here that's $633 trillion, it's got to be notional value of all this stuff. It can't be net.
Right. No, that's... Oh, God, yeah. That's a notional value. It's nowhere near net.
But is it notional because there's no exchange in the middle, that I still have to maintain my longs with you and my shorts with Dr. J and hope one of you doesn't go out because now I'm naked? The exchange doesn't get in the middle. They're not guaranteeing any of this stuff, is I guess what I'm saying.
No. No, okay. There's not a...
So it's still an over-the-counter exchange with registration, essentially.
For the most part.
Maybe a little more. Maybe a little more.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, it's still... How different trades get executed in that same market can vary. You see what I'm saying? Yeah. And it's dependent on a lot of factors. Like, if you've got like a plain vanilla swap that's very similar to lots of other things that are trading, they need to be traded across the swap execution
facility.
Explain
a plain vanilla swap.
Plain vanilla swap's just somebody that wants to go, you know, maybe a year out and say that I'm going to take I want a fixed rate of interest on some sort of loan, and the other side of it says I'm willing to take floating because I think that rates are going down. If I want fixed because I'm worried that rates are going to go up, and you basically enter into an agreement where one person pays the other person cash at the end of the agreement based on, for lack of a better way to put it, who won the trade.
Okay.
So that's a pretty straightforward plain vanilla swap. If you're looking at something that's and they refer to it as being bespoke, if you're looking at something that's more exotic and involves a lot more moving parts, those things don't necessarily have to be traded on the SEF. Now, sometimes they are, and a lot of people like to put things on the SEF so people can see what's trading, and maybe create more interest in what's trading.
How does anybody... In the simplest stuff, how does somebody make any dough on this stuff? I mean, I understand we're
just like any other market makers do. They're people that are. If I'm gonna play like I'm the legitimate user, and I'm an insurance company that needs to offset some interest rate risk, and I want to enter into a 1-year swap. Well, as a buy side entity, what you would do is you would put out. And you probably remember a request for quotes.
Yeah.
It's like an RFQ, but on the swap execution facility, when you do an RFQ, a certain number of entities are allowed to are expected to come back and give you bids and offers on that, and then you can trade with one of those people electronically. There's a little bit more anonymity for the person that's entering into that swap, which is kind of good for them. Back in the day when you'd pick up the phone and call, you the other side of the trade would be just, you know, one entity, and they'd have a pretty good idea of what you're getting ready to do. So the market they gave you might not be the best market in the world for you. So it's actually made trading these things better for the legitimate users. It's also allowing – it used to be this market was dominated by like 10 very large banks, and now – anybody with, you know, it's a lot easier for, you know, if you wanted to become a market maker in the swaps market, it's a lot easier for you to do so. Three or four years ago, you never would have been able to do it.
All right. So if somebody says, I want a fixed rate for a year, and somebody else says, I only want to give you a floating rate.
Uh-huh.
I understand that there's people who jump in the middle and say, for this price, I'll make it fixed. Right?
Yeah.
It's a swap among actually three people. I'm buying a plant from you or a ship, and I'm going to pay you in a year. I want to give you 6% interest, and you say no, because if interest rates go up, I want more than that. Somebody will get in the middle and say, mm-hmm. If you give me 6.25, I'll guarantee the other guy gets what he wants, type of thing. Mm-hmm. So that's known as, that's a swap. But now, if you talk about, say for instance, I buy $100 million worth of Italian bonds, and I'm getting paid 7%, okay, and then say the rate in the U.S., I'm going back to old days, is 4. Now, we're AAA, and they're God knows what the hell they are. So if I go to a third party to essentially guarantee that.
Or to lock in the currency differential so that you know exactly what you're going to make.
But if the market mm-hmm. says that the U.S. is 4%, okay,
uh-huh.
and that's what risk-free rates are, which, of course, they're not anymore, and Italians are 3% over that because ours are AAA and theirs are, you know, B- or something. If I go to the swap guy,
uh-huh.
why does he not charge me the same 3%?
They would charge you very close to it.
So then what's
they
the point?
They would.
So what's the point?
You've got to fit, you. What's the point behind that one?
No, I'm saying.
Well, if you're for some reason, if you're trying to, you would end up. You could lock in something currency wise that maybe allowed you to, instead of making the 4% risk free here, investing in Italian bonds and then doing something where the currency is not fully reflecting that interest rate differential.
Forget the currency part.
That's the kind of thing you might want to trade.
The thing that got people in trouble mm-hmm. in 2008 were essentially guaranteeing, somebody guaranteeing Italy, and they don't have the money. AIG can't guarantee a country, but they did.
Yeah. AIG got talked into doing a lot of stuff.
What I'm saying is,
and the people that talked him into it took the other side of the trades.
No, I'm asking you as a professor.
Uh-huh.
That why would the rate be any different? Because if the actual price,
theoretically, it shouldn't be.
But and all I've done is I'm still ended up with my 4%.
Pretty much.
But now instead of just going to the U.S. where I think I'm always going to get my money back.
Uh-huh.
I got the Italians involved and you involved. Why would I do that?
Well,
just to get the 4%.
There may be a difference in the currency forward.
Okay.
Because of the risk differential.
Or if you're dumb enough,
you know what?
Which you wouldn't be. You're dumb enough with AIG and say, I'll only take a percent, yeah. and I'll guarantee it.
They took a lot less than a percent.
I'm saying, so that was idiotic on their part. So there was looking at this. Explain to me, Professor, why shouldn't the fee be the difference in the two rates? It should be.
Theoretically, it should be, but it's just like if you were to buy a really, if you were to buy a Tesla bond right now and match it up with maybe selling short a U.S. Treasury bond. There's a lot more risk in that Tesla bond right now because, day to day, God knows what's going on with that company. It's the same thing. It's not going to be because you're going to get, you should, even when you lock in the currency differential, you actually should receive more than the 4% because of that lower rating for the Italian bond. And you would.
Right.
You would.
Should make out on this deal because now.
But you're not going to make 7%. You're probably going to give up 1 or 2 with the currency. But you still would lock in a little bit better rate.
Didn't AIG at one point, I don't know if I read this someplace, I forget the articles, insure 40% of all the mortgage interest insurance in the entire state of California at one point?
Yeah, they got huge into that market.
So they really think they could back up a whole state?
They didn't think they were going to have to.
You know of anybody?
They basically took a look at what had happened historically in the housing market and matched it up against what their risk exposure was, and their worst case scenario was not going to put them out of business, but what ended up happening was much worse than the previous worst case scenario.
Do you know of anybody in the whole fiasco of 2008? Well, I mean, it's still going on. Some people in houses.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know anybody who had private mortgage insurance that, when they fell out, The mortgage insurance company wrote the check for 20 or 30 grand to the bank. I don't know a soul.
I don't know anybody that.
You know, you had all kinds of people that paid for it. Did they just not pay anybody? They must have paid somebody. They couldn't just go somewhere.
I think they just took your house, didn't they?
No, the banks do, but I'm saying, from what I understand, we had somebody on the show, God, a long time ago. Mm-hmm. He said they essentially insured the mortgage. And you know, so if you're paying somebody that's not cheap, it's a couple hundred hours a month, right?
Yeah.
So all of a sudden you buy a house at $250 and you put 10% down. At least they insured the other 10%, right?
Yeah.
But I don't know of anybody who piled out of the house at $190 where the bank said, oh, don't worry, we got $25,000 from the mortgage insurance guy, you're only down 10. I don't know of anybody who...
I mean, maybe the banks got some of that when people walked away.
I bet they got some, but
yeah.
It's not like you as a homeowner, God, I'm down $35,000. Oh, don't worry, the mortgage insurance guys are up for $25,000, you're only down 10. I've never heard of
I don't think you're down 10. Yeah, that you're not the one that benefits from that.
No, not at all. But the insurance, you're paying for it.
Yeah, I think you're paying for it, and that's one of the ways that they're willing to give you the rates that they give you. With this assumption that they're covered for part of it when you walk away.
As one of my buddies once said, insurance companies are very good at collecting money. They're not half bad at investing money, and they're very bad at paying money.
They're never in a hurry to pay out.
No, it's pretty... Well, hey, they're regulated. People are monitoring.
They're very regulated.
They're monitoring.
There's 52 regulators watching insurance companies.
That's unbelievable. SP Futures down 3. NASDAQ Futures up 25 cents. We busted forward. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. She's Jay-Z on the board. He's Mr. Russell Rhodes over there in a suit today. I don't know, something's wrong. I hope he's not going to get a loan. I don't think so. But
I wear the ruffles and tucks for that.
Oh, all right. Not the blue ones.
Oh, yeah. Powder blue.
Oh, God. They still make those?
Yeah.
What would you do if you went and had like a wedding with like 15 people in it and you wanted like a powder blue? Where the hell do they have to go to get 15 powder blue tucks in a tux jacket?
The Goodwill store.
Oh, God. S&P futures down 1.25. NASDAQ futures now up 7. We predicted this thing was going to be up by the end of the show. Every once in a while we get to be right. Dow futures down 64. Big news in there. Well, actually, I've only got Goldman Sachs down $1. Even Boeing, which was down a bunch earlier, is only down 33 cents. So, anyway, I think that will come up as well. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 32.2%. FTSE down 23.3%, CAC around down 15.3%, not down as much as they were a little while ago. Asia, Nikkei down 49, call that 0.2%. Shanghai up 25.8%, Hang Seng up 161. Oil, and this is gasoline, is there'll be no inflation on this though either. I got RBOB now 194, even though oil is 58 down 39 cents. We've got gold was up a little bit, up $1.40, so not much going on there. Jay-Z, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Beautiful day. Looking at it, anyway.
It is a beautiful day. The time is now 7:35. Chicago's high today is 55, low of 34. Clearly sunny outside. Phoenix is mostly cloudy today with a high of 85, low of 58. In basketball, the Bulls lost to the Raptors, 112-103. Suns were off. In spring training, the Cubs beat the Red Sox, 16-7. White Sox beat the Diamondbacks, 7-1. And in hockey, the Coyotes beat the Blackhawks 1-0. In traffic, one accident on Roosevelt at Clinton, and still cleaning up that accident earlier on Kedzie. Roads are closed between Douglas and Polk. Nothing else. Back to you.
I had an album. What was the name of a band? It's a Beautiful Day, isn't it? Wasn't it?
Oh, no. It's, you're thinking of the song that Mr. Rogers would sing.
No, there actually was an album.
He was always sporting the cardigan.
Ah, well, yes, he was. Yeah. He had a pipe.
Oh
too.
My God,
he had a pipe too going, didn't he?
Yeah. If you got to look to your right, look at Ted Cruz.
Oh God, with the funky gray beard, that looks bad.
It's just not a good look. So,
I don't know. I was having a debate with Kevin. What part of grounded isn't grounded? And with this thing flying,
what did he say?
He said, "Well, yeah, you probably can fly it if you got no people on it." I'm thinking,
well, apparently you can fly if you got no people on it.
What's the bar about? We don't even want it in our airspace. We don't want to land it on somebody's head.
I assume that Southwest knew what they were doing.
Well, I'm sure they got the okay. Can we fly the storage?
What I'm really amazed at, how much, what do you need? Triple, quadruple overtime to be the guy that flies it?
I'm going to say
that's what I was kind of shocked at. Is where they find two guys to get in the cockpit.
I'm going
to
say, in the mortal words of the guy who wrote The Right Stuff, no matter what it is, somebody will fly it.
Yeah, they were going for it. I mean, it was probably just a couple guys that needed to get out to California for something.
I'm sure there was a pilot when this all happened a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
There was a guy on he was going to get on he was deadheading on a 737-400 or something.
Yeah.
So somebody ran up to him and they saw he had the pilot's outfit on and they go, "Would you fly in a 737 MAX?" And guess what the answer was?
Probably, yeah.
He goes, yes, if I was the pilot.
If I had the control?
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I'm sure every guy here is convinced. One of my buddies, our buddy Greg lives up on Superior and whatever, near Franklin. Mm-hmm. There's a little place that I've been there forever called the Club Lago, if you don't know where that is.
Yep.
And once in a while we stop for an adult beverage there when I drop them off. And interesting group of people at the bar. Matter of fact, it's architects and it's lawyers and stuff. So you get a whole different view of the world. A couple guys are lawyers for the police, and a couple guys are architects building schools, and it's pretty fascinating. I mean, you, matter of fact, last night, I did not realize, talking about shifting subjects, I was talking to the architect guy, I didn't realize that you can make serious structural steel out of recycled stuff.
Yeah.
I was of the opinion that you could make essentially crap steel, you know, rebar and that kind of stuff out of it. And but that if you're going to build like a, you know, a bridge girder, you expect the last 500 years, you start it over with something new. And he said, no, the impurities that you get in iron ore and all those kinds of things that you work your way through with all the chemicals to make serious structural steel, is the impurities are actually not as bad in recycled stuff, and it goes through the same chemical process as if it was starting all over.
Yeah.
He said, I mean, I didn't realize that. I thought you only could use that up to that there was a level at which you couldn't use recycled stuff, that if you're going to build a Golden Gate Bridge, you start it fresh. And he goes, no, you just process it a lot differently and more carefully. I didn't realize that. So you learn something every night.
That's kind of frightening, isn't it?
But
you got to believe they know what they're doing, right?
The weird part, I always thought, you know, this is the strange part to me. Maybe I had a totally disjointed view of the world when I worked at some of these. I worked at Pullman, and I worked a couple of places. Pullman being the first one, or the most important one, because I learned most of my stuff there. All these guys, you know, they most of them fought in a war or didn't. They were tradesmen that couldn't go to the war because they were tool and die makers or something else. They were essentially classified out of active service, right?
Yeah.
These guys, they all knew how to read a drawing. They took pride. And it's not like people now don't take pride in their work. They do. But it really was, you trusted these guys, and they had inspectors. And if you screwed something up and the inspector had to tell you to do it over again, it was such a thing in the plant. The guy didn't know what he's doing, or is he hung over? What's the problem with him? I mean, there was such a thing that when you started out pounding metal from a big thing that came in the door, and 8 weeks later a railroad car went out the door, there was such a pride in the thing that we just made a railroad car that's going to last 40 years. That's pretty damn neat. I mean, you didn't want it to, they used to use the word, we don't want it kiddywampus. We don't want it going on a track sideways. We want it straight. I mean, you want the thing to be perfect. If you open up the electrical box, it was like an artist was in there. I mean, everything, when it went out, there wasn't a speck of dust in the thing. I mean, the cleaners took incredible. I mean, there's, you need a guy to be able to read the drawing, know what he's supposed to do, to have a template, check it against the template, and the guy who comes, and the engineer says, you know, whatever, 5 inches plus or minus 4 thousandths. It needs to be within those tolerances. Every 4/5 one, somebody inspects it, and off you go. Mm-hmm. This is the world I understand. Now, when you get in this other world where you got to have procedures, you got to have this, you got to have, the guy just can't come inspect every 4th one. Why is it every 4th one and not every 3rd one? And the procedures manual is bigger than the actual drawings. And now everybody's got to be watching everybody. Well, if the first guy knows what he's doing, he doesn't need somebody watching him, right? If he doesn't know what he's doing, you can have 30 people watching him. It's not going to do any good. Or where am I wrong?
No, you're absolutely. I can't poke a hole in your argument whatsoever.
I mean, but somehow we're going down this other road. I mean, if you would have had 4 guys watching, everybody riveting the Golden Gate Bridge, you couldn't have put 4 guys in there. The thing would never have been finished.
Right. There is a happy medium,
yeah,
with all of that stuff. I was thinking about that with respect to the planes on the way in this morning. Was, you know, although that's something, because there was a guy on the radio that was talking about how the FAA's dropping the ball because they're not, you know, standing on top of Boeing and watching everything that they do, and I'm thinking, well, you know, Boeing doesn't want things like this to happen.
No.
You know, it's not like they're cutting corners without realizing if they do, that it's going to be a massive negative for them. So I almost feel like you don't really have to watch Boeing that closely, because if they have a plane that drops out of the sky and it's their fault, that's not going to go over well for them.
You're a free market capitalist.
Yes.
That says, which I would like to be and always wanted to be and for a long time was, but we're faced with not free markets anymore.
Yeah.
And therein lies the rub.
Because you got two choices on the plane.
Yeah. Therein lies the rub. I mean, anybody who thinks, I'll take your side of this, which you're never supposed to do. Anybody who thinks that the reason why an American Airlines plane doesn't fall out of the sky is because a Fed guy is watching.
Because the FAA.
I mean, is insane, because crashes are not good for business.
Right.
if you think you're going to crash, you're not flying. I mean, right? I mean,
right.
And first of all, nobody's going to insure you. Right? I mean,
And then nobody's going to fly you.
But now, but this particular.
Remember, ValueJet? Was that the one where the jet that just kind of crashed into the swamp in South Florida and they never found it again?
It was
AirTran or ValueJet or one of those guys.
Yeah.
They were cutting corners. I know they were cutting.
Sure.
I sat next to a pilot on another flight who was a pilot for them. I was like on a Northwest flight or something like that. That goes back in the day. And he was saying that they really push him to keep to the schedule. And he goes, you know, I'm reaching a point where I'm just going to have to say, I can't work for you guys anymore. And then about 3 weeks later, one of their planes, you know, falls into the swamp. They never even were able to recover that one.
Well, I was, I took a trip to, Detroit, back and forth in the same day, which I might be a little too old for. Saying, especially when the last 3 hours were through a snowstorm, I could have used a wingman. Anyway, I've not driven that much in kind of snow before. I mean, well, I have when I was younger. We always went skiing and everything, and you know, for a long time, I probably drove more in snow than anybody in Chicago, because every year we drive out west a couple times and whatever, and you know, I'm pretty darn good at it. Well, I'm sitting there going, "What the bleep?" You know, the one. Road, the one lane is, you know, you have the ruts in it because everybody's driving on it. It used to be that the truck drivers, and I've seen these commercials about the truck driver that was using his cruise control when it was slippery and they killed a family and blah, blah,
blah.
Russell, these trucks are going by me at 75.
Oh, yeah.
On the side where it's just fresh snow. They don't know what's under there.
Right.
And it's obvious they got the cruise control. I mean, what is going on with this? If I'm part of State Farm or whoever insures that company, I'm calling them up and saying, I'm not insuring you ever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there needs to be somebody that kind of watches this stuff. It doesn't always have to be the government. You and when you were a kid, I don't know, maybe aren't quite old enough, but if you went out and bought an extension cord and it didn't say UL approved on it, you took it back.
I don't ever remember that.
Well, every piece of electronic stuff, a toaster and iron that people bought in the 60s when, you know, electric wasn't as, I mean, you didn't have the irons that shut off in five minutes if you didn't touch them and those kinds of things. I mean, now this stuff's a lot more sophisticated. But back then, they knew there had to be somebody watching a piece of electric so it didn't burn your house down.
Mm-hmm.
But UL Labs did that. You got it. And if it said UL Labs approved, that's what you bought. What I'm saying is that the pressure, and you and I think in a lot of ways in the economic stuff, I think you're a lot better than I am on some of the number parts of the economics. I might be a little stronger on the behavioral side, because that's what I study, mm-hmm. and this is what you're teaching. That's why I love to have you here, because I get to dig into the other side. But if you look at moons circling the Earth, and one of the moons is they're chasing Airbus for a year.
Uh-huh.
Right, because the 320 came out with the new engines. Boeing was still farting around if they were going to come up with a new plane or not, because they just canceled the 757. And now all of a sudden, the 737 are selling more of them than anything else they've ever sold. They're going to sell more 737s than they have of all the other planes they've ever made combined. That's how powerful this plane is. Well, now they want to have it bigger, not faster, because they're always slower. Bigger, more people, and more fuel efficient. All right, so now they're chasing Boeing for a year. So they're moving the engines, okay, but the strong part of that plane has been, no matter how many iterations, from the 100, by which they never sold, it was just an experimental, the 200 to mm-hmm. the 800 model, Southwest Air or anybody could stop in and you'd hop in one jet. And you didn't care whether it was a 300, 400, 500, the same.
There was same this interchangeability.
Yeah, the same flight crew plops in. Where, I mean, how many times you on airlines, the guys show up and all of a sudden it's a 67, not a 57, and they go, oop, not me. Because I'm only checked out on a 57 or whatever.
Right.
And so they market this thing in one way and they're pushing it out. And you know what it has amazing similarities to is the DC-10. They got caught behind Lockheed with the L-1011 and rushed it out. And how many DC-10s went down? About 8.
Yeah, that was...
like 8 out of 120 or some incredible number. Like 10% of the planes crashed. That's nobody has a record like that, right?
And how many DC-10s are out there now?
There's probably still a bunch in cargo, third world somewhere.
Yeah, things like that. But,
I flew DC-10s all the time, and after some of the stuff but it was the same thing. They were under pressure to catch whatever, and the same thing happened with the cargo door. The people at the FAA, they said, no, you got to fix this, and they used the political muscle to say it wasn't a grounding. What happened was, if you don't remember, there was a cargo door in a DC-10 that sometimes wouldn't shut properly.
Yeah.
And the latch, if you were a strong man, you could push the latch to where it went to the spot where it was locked. But what you were doing was bending the rod.
And that...
The rod
was not... That rigging will work for a while until it doesn't.
Well, no, it doesn't. But yeah. So it's obviously supposed to go in the other holes and lock that way. But it wasn't reaching the other holes. It was bending in the way.
Was there duct tape involved?
There might have been duct tape. But what happened was the cargo hold is pressurized.
Uh-huh.
The whole plane's pressurized. Okay, the basement, for lack of a better term. So when this door blew out, the pressure decreased in the cargo hold versus upstairs. Well, the floor is not strong enough to take that pressure. So you essentially blew a hole in the floor.
It started warping up. People probably started getting closer to the ceiling of the plane.
Well, but the point is all the hydraulics run under the floor.
Yeah.
So you blow your hydraulic line. So now you can't control your flaps and your ailerons and all that stuff. I'm not a pilot, but so that happened, and that's what happened to the guy in Nebraska somewhere. It happened in the one over Paris.
Yeah.
Like a couple of them. Well, they managed to get the thing down to a work order the next time the plane has maintenance, fix it. And of course, one went down between the time the plane, instead of grounding them, making sure the damn thing got fixed.
Yeah.
So there's politics all the time in this, though. But in this one, I mean, the Export-Import Bank, does anybody talk about that anymore? To Boeing says, oh, no, we need it. Both sides of the aisle shut up, right?
Yeah.
But does anybody get money out of there except Boeing?
Probably not.
So, they're by far our biggest exporter, right? And we got an administration that for some reason is so hung up about this export-import stuff that there's no way that they're going to have a problem with Boeing until all of a sudden something really bad happens like it did.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea, these pilots... There's not even my buddies at the Lago tell me there's not even a simulator for this plane yet.
Oh no, there. I mean, it was there was kind of much like the workaround you just said with the DC-10.
Yeah,
there was kind of a workaround. Here's what you do, just in case with the 737 Max, and some people probably and honestly. I think I'll almost guarantee you, and we'll never know for sure, the two that went down, those pilots probably never read the new instructions.
Oh, there were some American pilots. I was reading their stuff two weeks ago, and they said they never heard of it either. And what happened to them, they were trained enough.
Probably just thought it was, like you said, they thought it was another version of the 737. They didn't realize how different it was.
Well, my guys, these guys are pilots, a couple of them I've been talking to, they said the difference in their mind is that American pilots all started, stick and rudder guys.
Uh-huh.
A lot of them in the military, a lot of them not, a lot of them. But he said, his point is the airlines now want you to give this thing over to autopilot 5 feet off the ground because you save a thimble full of gas. He said, American pilot, even though he's supposed to, never gives up the plane till he's comfortable with safe. In other words, you're 15,000, 20,000 feet. or 10 or whatever, I don't know the numbers, but you're not giving the thing up while you're still in danger. And the guys here just basically say, screw you to the rules. And if it costs us an extra 50 cents worth of gas, fire me. Because that's just the style. So I'm sure those guys that were flying this one, I guarantee that pilot, autopilot was nowhere near at when they were going up. I'm guessing, but I'm a guess guarantee. Can you do that? Guess and guarantee? Just saying.
Guess with a lot of assurity.
Yes. All right. So we got 8 minutes. We're going to take advantage of the economics professor.
Uh-huh.
What do you think of all these numbers coming out and how conflicted they seem to be? What's right? What's wrong? Did they give,
the negative stuff's right.
Did they give Powell a lobotomy?
No, they did not give Powell a lobotomy.
What'd they do to him? They have his family in jail somewhere?
They got him.
They got his family.
They got, there's going to be a special investigation on him for a couple of years.
Oh, God.
Keep an eye on him. I don't, I think maybe.
Well, Mueller's out of a job.
You're seeing conflicting numbers, so he doesn't want to take a stand in either direction right now, which I can, it's a wimpy way out, but can kind of understand. But I have a funny feeling a recession's going to hit us quicker, sooner rather than later.
Well, are we going to admit to it?
Sooner than a lot of people think.
Are we going to admit to it?
Maybe by the end of this year.
Will we admit to it?
We will deny until, you and I off the air were having the conversation about having both a wife and a girlfriend.
Yeah.
And we weren't talking about either of us in specific situations. You were talking about Bonfire of the Vanities and why in the world would he have a wife and a girlfriend? Cause both of them ever did was yell and scream at
complain,
him.
Yeah, complain.
Or Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
Must have taken years off his life.
He like doubled his misery.
But also, he accidentally calls home, goes home, and his wife, confronts him, and he denies, and until he just couldn't deny anymore, and then he goes home, and all the furniture's gone.
Yep.
I think it's the same situation. They will deny until they just can't, until they have to acknowledge what's going on in the numbers.
That happened to a buddy of mine from college or high school. He goes home, all the furniture's gone, right?
Yep.
So he takes the car.
Mm-hmm.
So they go to the for the judge, before they had a whole lot of dough.
Uh-huh.
The judge goes, you know what, why don't you keep the furniture and you keep the car and we call it even? They go, okay.
When I lived up, like, north in Dearborn, I was walking the dog early one morning, and all of a sudden this shirt just hits the ground, and slowly but surely, some guy's clothes were being thrown out of a window.
Oh, God.
Went back later, and the whole block was just this guy's clothes.
I have to ask. without being a sexist, which I'm not.
Yeah.
When if a guy ever did that, it sure wouldn't be funny. It would be the guy being...
It would probably be... Yeah.
It'd be different.
Yeah. But I just... Some guy's clothes were... You know what? Could have been a guy throwing the guy's clothes out. Who knows?
Well, the one that did the
commercial. I didn't see who was doing the throwing.
There was
saw a rain of clothes.
That's true. In this day and age, it might be a guy. But I'm sort of curious. There was a young lady, younger than me, on after Paul talked last week. And she normally is one of these people, works for a big firm, and I think the economy's good. We're investing this, investing that. And she caught everybody by surprise. She goes, you know what? I'm always a half full kind of girl. Always have been.
Mm-hmm.
She goes, I just got this weird feeling that we're backing off into this pouring money into the system thing. The Japanese, she goes, for God's sake, how many more ETFs are going to buy? They own all of them now, or darn near.
They do.
And she goes, in Europe, we're going back to negative interest. When are we going to figure out that this hasn't really worked, except for moving money from most people into a few people, and to go back into the same thing as if it's the fix when it hasn't fixed anything? When are we going to learn? And everybody's looking at her, and they like cut her off.
Uh-huh.
And it wasn't like she agreed with me that all of a sudden I'm talking. I mean, she basically said, when are we going to figure out that this isn't helping anybody?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it is. I mean, if it is, I'd seriously go for it.
You know what, without cheating, the CME's Fed tool, for the September meeting, what are the odds that rates will be lower right now? Lower, which would coincide with having to do something. You always do this to me. I'm getting to do this to you.
See, now, we've also talked on air and off air. In the world we live in, you can't ever answer a question without asking a question back.
No, I answer. I always get a stab at the number. I'm making you guess a number for once.
What interest rate are you talking about?
The target rate, the target Fed funds rate.
And I'm going to say
the September 18th meeting. Okay, what are the odds?
I'm going to say to you that the target Fed funds rate does not exist anymore.
Okay. Answer. You're gonna bob and weave for 2 minutes and not.
No, I'm not. I'm gonna say that the rate at which the Fed is paying member banks an overhead is gonna be lower, which is what you're asking me.
But what do you think the derivative market is pricing as the odds of it being lower at the September meeting?
Probably. I don't know. I'm not sure. 80%.
60.
All right, but I will say this.
I'm going to tell you it was zero about 3 or 4 weeks ago.
Right, I'm gonna,
and that number keeps climbing, and that's the market telling you we're getting ready to hit a recession.
I have a buddy, imagine that, who used to be in the Fed funds market. And 2 nights ago, or last weekend, I said, Todd, if they weren't paying banks money at the Fed, what would the Fed funds rate be on the definition that you and I grew up with? And he said, you're the only guy that would ask that question. He goes, we'd be at 1%. There is no Fed fund market.
I know that. Still.
All right, how many other people know that?
Okay. Well, beyond that, I'm just talking about what is the market telling us with respect to the economy without looking at the economic numbers.
Do I think if the 10-year rate is going to be 2.5% and those guys will be paying banks 3% at night? No, they won't be.
No. Thank absolutely
you.
Not.
Russell, you got it out of me. You're right, buddy.
Yep.
SP Futures up a buck. NASDAQ Futures up. At least we predicted we'd be up by the end of the show. Be back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.